going nowhere.
Ask yourself, do you want to be famous?
Come on. Check out this bizarre rapper style used by me, the B.I.G. I put my...
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Cindy's Birthday Party. This is segment three of our discussion of hip-hop beefs.
Beef rap.
And we want to get right into this one because this is probably going to take up a good part of our segment. And that would be the beef between Biggie, a.k.a. Notorious, or actually Notorious B.I.G., a.k.a. Biggie Smalls.
Yeah, initially
and
Biggie Smalls.
Tupac Shakur.
Yes.
This beef could be labeled a couple of things. You could say it's Biggie versus Tupac. You could say it's Death Row versus Bad Boy. You could say it's East versus West.
Right.
Because all of those things, all of those dynamics were at work and at play
yes.
in the mid-90s, and all of them almost can be attributed to Biggie and Tupac. So it's like we reached a point in the mid-90s where a lot of the resentment and the resentment is really the only word I can use, I guess, towards the East Coast, New York in particular, by the rest of the country had kind of boiled over. And I guess that Death Row / Tupac, in a lot of people's eyes, carried the flag for that.
Right.
You know, specifically from the 95 Source Awards, right? Suge gets up there and says, anybody who don't want to have your executive producer all up in the video dancing,
yeah,
come to Death Row.
Straight diss
yeah,
to Puff
you know,
Daddy.
And the crowd boos. And then there's a situation not related specifically to that, but when Outkast wins their award for best duo or best group or whatever it is, mm-hmm. and they go up there and the crowd boos again.
Boos them, right.
Because we had entered a point where a few things were happening. The rest of the nation was really starting to grow from a rap standpoint. Like, you know, the South has Outkast, right?
Right.
Two legitimately lyrical giants. The West Coast had already started doing their thing. So maybe on some levels, New York felt threatened.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like it. So they're booing these guys even though they're good. Remember, Andre says the South got something to say.
Right.
Snoop gets up on stage and said, New York though, had love for Snoop Dogg.
Right.
And Death Row, y'all don't love us.
Yeah, he got got in his feelings.
He did, you know. Like, and I think in some ways he was angry about it, but he was also trying to say, we're not really here to try to diss you. You know, we understand. You know, we know where we at. We know we New York, blah, blah, blah. And so when we come out of that, you know, and I think it was another incident, too, from what I understand, backstage, perhaps, between Tupac and A Tribe Called Quest, or Q-Tip in particular, where Pac ran up on them or something like that. I may be conflating the two. I'm not sure. Hmm. But I think that was involved with that. But this beef supposedly goes back to when Tupac is at Quad Studios in, is it 94, and he gets shot the first time.
the first time.
Right. Because supposedly, Tupac was running with dudes like Haitian Jack, like Jimmy Henchman, dudes like that in New York when he would come to New York. And Biggie, who was a friend of his at that point in time,
right,
told him, hey, man, don't mess with these dudes. These dudes are, you know, you don't really want to get involved with them like that.
Right.
Supposedly, allegedly, Jimmy Henchman wanted Tupac to do some songs or to manage him or something to that effect. I'm not 100% on that details. Mm-hmm. I know that, there are a lot of people who are out on the internet, so you can get specifics on it. Tupac was like, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, he was always very upfront and defiant. If he didn't want to do something, he's not going to do it. Well, the problem is this dude that you're talking to is a legit gangster.
Right.
So supposedly, henchmen sent some dudes to, quote-unquote, rough him up. Tupac is on the elevator, or he comes up to Quad Studios. Biggie sees him out the window. Hey, come on up. He gets on the elevator to come up there. He gets off the elevator. He sees the dudes who are there to rob him.
Mm-hmm.
He realizes what's going on. He gets ready to pull his gun out. And despite what some of you Tupac fans want to say, he did, in fact, accidentally shoot himself. But he goes to pull the gun out to shoot them. They shoot him
right
in the elevator. He's laying there. Little Sean, surprisingly enough, is the one who sees him, comes running up to him, and is telling people, hey, you know, somebody called an ambulance or whatever.
Right.
because a lot of guys are just standing there looking. Partly because I think they know that who these cats are affiliated with, and they don't want to have anything
right.
to do with it.
Yeah, I'm not trying to step in and save anybody. Right,
so. Right, man. Hey, man, if Jimmy Henchman them has something to do with this, son, I'm not messing with you. You know how dudes can be. Tupac said that Biggie them ran out and they saw him and they were just standing there too. He said Lil Sean was the only one who actually tried to assist him. Mm-hmm. So Tupac goes to the hospital. He says Biggie and them never coming to visit him. He thinks that they maybe set him up. Or the story is what he publicly says is he thinks that they set him up. Right. I've heard things that they say that privately he knew that they didn't. Whatever. That can't be proven, so we don't know if that's the case. He goes to prison later for something else, right? Suge Knight, president of Death Row Records, gets him out of prison.
Mm.
And from that point on, you know, now we got Tupac talking. There's already, you know, that animosity. And now we got Tupac, you know, talking, saying ill stuff about.
Well, yeah, about Biggie. And also, do not forget, one of Biggie's greatest songs, Who Shot Ya, comes out
right
not too long after this incident occurs.
Good point.
And so if it was you who got shot and you think it's this particular person and then he puts a song out called Who Shot Ya, you might want to start considering, hey, that dude might have shot me or had me shot. And so this kind of attributed to making the beef a lot more than, you know, than it could have been something that it was explained. But of course, now you have a target. You, the person that shot Tupac, has a target he can actually blame. This makes sense to me. Put two and two together.
And
somebody shot
that,
me, this song comes out. So
yeah, and you know, and I think that this is the whole thing surrounding the song Who Shot Ya is very similar to what we were talking about with Eric being Rakim versus EPMD.
Right.
In that the song didn't necessarily have anything to do with that other person, but when you talk about Biggie and Tupac, you're talking about a whole lot of street element cats involved around them at all times.
Right.
Who could have very easily, for whatever reason, we don't know, for personal reasons, could have gassed a lot of this up to turn into something else.
Something more than what it needed to be, right? I think it was just a case of Biggie already had the song ready to be put out. And
that could be.
And then it gets put out, you know.
But then, again, that's one of those things where if you use better judgment, say, you know what, maybe I don't put this out right now.
Mm, good point.
You know, this dude got shot. I haven't even gone to the hospital to see him, but I'm dropping a song called Who Shot Ya, you know, like that's a bad idea. And then you can go back and listen to, like we were talking about mixtapes last week.
Mm.
And if you remember, I want to say it's an SNS tape in like 95 where Puffy, P. Diddy, who always likes to play like he's such an innocent bystander, is talking mad trash about Death Row, about Tupac in particular. Now, some of it, in his defense, is in response to things that have been said about him.
Right.
But he didn't have that, you know how they say, have that same energy when I see you next time? He didn't have that same energy when Suge was on stage talking about come to Death Row.
Right, if you don't want to be real.
But he's on one of those mixtapes, and he's the first 5 minutes of it or whatever is just Puffy talking bad about them.
Mm.
And I can remember another clip where I see Puffy at some type of album party or something. They got Biggie sitting on a throne with the crown on.
Right.
And he's like, this is the new king of New York. Oh, no, this is the new king of rap.
Mm.
He's from here. He's from Brooklyn. Not from California. Not from L.A. Not from Cali. Not from Compton. He's from Brooklyn.
Mm.
You know, you can see how that can become a problem.
Yeah, Puffy has that sort of vibe about him of being a notorious pot stirrer, so to speak.
I think that he did not anticipate, well, nobody could have, I don't think, that it would have elevated to the level that it did.
Yeah.
And, you know, but that's why I said it's one of those things where there is some accountability to be had on both sides.
Agreed.
Because a lot of people made a lot of serious missteps that, you know, as we know, ended in tragedy, even though the tragic death of Tupac, I do not believe, had anything necessarily to do with Bad Boy. But it just set a whole lot of events in motion that eventually lead to the, you know. So Tupac puts out Hit 'Em Up.
There you go. I was ready to mention it.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutality.
Yeah.
I'm going to murder them.
Yeah. When you spit the lines, I ain't got no MF and friends. That's why I F'd your B, you fat MF-er.
You know, so funny.
I know. I'm trying to clean it up, man. I'm trying to be a nice person because me, I'm a cusser, and I just, you know, I'm one to let, you know, the profanities rip.
So for those who don't understand and who need a translation of what Eric is saying, there are lines in the song Hit 'Em Up where Tupac is referring to Faith Evans, who was Notorious B.I.G.'s wife at the time, and he said that he had, as the grandma said in Nutty Professor, had relations.
Right.
He said he had relations with Faith Evans.
Yeah.
You know, and then there were all sorts of pictures and everything else released that, you know, that led people to
could have easily been innocent pictures considering that Tupac and Biggie were friends at one time. So, yeah, somebody may have snapped a picture of Pac and Faith together innocently enough, but that's all it takes. And you put it out there in the public eye, and then, of course, now people start taking sides. Oh, yeah, it must be true. He did such and such and such and such.
Right.
And rappers being ones to not want to lose any kind of street cred or to back down from a lot of stuff, they just let stuff run. And
how much responsibility does Vibe magazine have for all of these things that were? All of the stuff that was being printed in Vibe over those months that this is – I don't, you know, rap music has been around for 40 years. I don't think I ever remember anybody's beef getting as crazy and as wild as this thing was at that time.
Yeah, and as far as being in the public eye where just people knew about it. Now, there's some others, 50 Cent and Ja Rule.
Yeah.
There's also, I believe we had one with, who am I thinking about? I'm thinking of Beanie Siegel and Jadakiss. They also had a beef. But like you say, it's usually the crew or people outside of – don't even have anything to do with the music.
Right.
Who are the ones that are kind of stirring things up. It's always the worker bees outside get the hive buzzing, and then you get this stuff happening. So this is one of the – probably the worst situation where words from other folk – and pictures and people who really don't have anything to do with it and are trying to capitalize on it, like mm-hmm. Vibe magazine was, they stir stuff up even further because people, especially hip-hop artists at the time and probably to this day,
mm-hmm.
don't have a lot of back down in them, even though they probably should have back down in them. So.
Right, but, you know, back down can be detrimental to your career
right.
if your whole persona is built on being it's a tough
toughness,
guy.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. so you can't really do that at that point.
There you go. You know, and that's it. So you got to respond, you know, right. in kind.
And sometimes even if your persona is not being a tough guy, you don't want to be seen as a cream puff.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be like, hey, you know, I'm going to have to come back at you in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
But that was just one of those situations where, you know, Ice-T has – One of my favorites from my teenage years, and also just one of my favorite people just to listen to him talk about various things. And he said, you know, Tupac played hit him up for him.
Mm.
And he said that Tupac got kind of mad at him because he was like, you know, I guess he expected me to be like, yeah, you know, go ahead and run with it. That's hot right there. And he was like, yo, are you sure you want to do that? You know, you talking about my man's wife and this and that, you know, and you saying these things. Like, I don't think you want to do that. Because he said his thing that he tried to stress to Tupac is that, and this was not necessarily about that, but on what eventually caused him his life. It's like, you are out here running with people. You a rapper. You are in here, out here, getting in beefs with people who are never going to make a record.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They don't care about making a record.
Right.
Their claim to fame will be if they do something to you.
To you.
You know, and that's ultimately what happened. Mm. You know, he's at the MGM Grand. We all know the story. They jump Orlando Anderson. And, you know, it's on videotape. And then that same night, Tupac gets shot.
Right.
And he's a couple of days later, he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, if you look at, I don't know, maybe that's something we'll save for an episode specifically on Tupac, because it's so much to unravel when it comes to him. There's a lot of layers there.
Right.
But Tupac is dead, and then that's in 1996, And then at what, like September? Is it like in the fall of 96, wasn't it, I believe? I'm not 100% certain, but I think it's in the fall of 96, that fight, that Tyson and Bruce Seldon fight.
Because
that's where it was. Basically, Tyson had almost murdered Bruce Seldon. I've never seen a man that afraid to be in a ring before as Bruce Seldon was with Mike Tyson that night.
No, put Michael Spinks.
You and
Spinks.
I are both big boxing fans, so right, you
yeah,
know.
We know it, yeah. I'll put Michael Spinks above that, but that's a whole other story. Well, y'all know about the Michael Spinks versus
But he did
Tyson.
Get legitimately hit on the temple, though. I don't even know if Bruce Seldon got Seldon touched like, at the all. The breeze was just making him shake.
close enough. Don't swing at me no more. I'll fall down. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. Right. So. But anyway, that night, the night of that fight is when Tupac gets shot and he dies a couple of days later.
Mm.
And then March of the following year,
right,
Biggie is in California without a bulletproof vehicle.
Yeah.
And many people believe that Suge Knight ordered the hit on Biggie. You know, it's never been proven.
Proven, right.
But that is, you know, what's out there, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest that that may have been what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then Biggie is dead.
Right.
And to me, as I discussed on our Golden Era podcast, that is the end of the Golden Era. Because you took two guys who were two of the most dynamic MCs of their age, and to that point that had ever existed in the history of rap music. And, you know, in less than a year, both of them are dead.
Yep.
It's completely avoidable, I believe. Like, everything about the whole Biggie Tupac saga, to me, is kind of like, I'm a big history guy. So when I look at, like, if you look at the history of World War I, there's a lot of avoidable, unnecessary crap that goes on that leads to World War I and that just a lot of people end up dead for no reason, really.
Right.
You know, like a lot of unnecessary crap. You
yeah,
know?
A lot of
and that's just how I feel about Biggie
politics.
And Pac.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, there's a lot of things that go on in that whole feud that really could have been avoided
mm-hmm.
and really were not necessary. And if people had either, you know, let cooler heads prevail, as they say, if they had looked at the bigger picture,
right,
that sort of thing.
And that plays into it, too. You're dealing with people who are not quite as sophisticated enough to understand that, hey, let's look at the big picture here. Mm-hmm. Let's back down and let's everybody calm down and let's, you know, breathe a bit. But you get a lot of, like I say, unsophisticated people who are outside of the hip-hop game. They're not even rappers.
Right.
You ain't making no record. You're not doing anything musically. You're just a guy who happens to be in the crew, and you want to make a name for yourself, and you want to impress the head of your particular crew, which is the artist themselves.
Right.
Or the in Death Row's case, kind of Suge, to be honest.
Yep.
You want to impress him because he comes off as a bit of a gangster himself.
He was, you know.
Yeah.
The whole thing with Piru Mob and Suge Knight being a member.
Yeah.
That is part of what plays into Tupac eventually being murdered.
Right.
The whole beef between Eastside Crips and Piru Mob, which is, like I said, that's probably just for a Tupac episode
in its own. Right.
And then on the other side, with Puffy and his boy Wolf, who, you know, for those who don't know, Wolf is a guy who got killed here in Atlanta some years back. But he was tight with Puffy, and Wolf had killed someone who was close to Suge. And a lot of people think that that's how all of this may have started.
Right.
But Biggie and Tupac are the two artists, and they were the ones that the world was concerned about.
Right.
And they are the ones that ended up being sacrificed.
True. And it's sad and when you think back on it. Yeah, the two, like you say, the two that are the most influential and the most out there and known are the ones who end up, you know, tragically dead out of all of this.
And I've always felt like the worst thing that could have ever happened to rap music is East Coast, West Coast, not even rivalry, feud.
Mm.
It robbed so many people of good music, for one. It took two of the best rappers and two of the better guys away at an early age. And, you know, one thing we have to remember, too, is we're two guys in our 40s talking about how cooler heads should have prevailed.
Right.
Like, we're less likely to do something, you know, something crazy on the spur of the moment because mm-hmm. somebody made us mad, then we would have, even back then, because we were in our 20s then too, you know what I'm saying? So, like, you get involved with that and you get a bunch of guys and testosterone levels through the roof and everybody's acting crazy and it's like, oh, we're not finna be disrespected.
Right.
And it turns into something crazy. Maybe if they had lived, if the brothers had been 40-year-old Biggie and 40-year-old Tupac, they probably would have been like, you know what, we might make a song about each other, but it's not going to go beyond that.
Yeah, I would probably say more to not just our age, but even in our 20s, I think we were educated enough and willing to admit things about ourselves that guys probably in those particular crews were not capable of doing because of their education level or
their egos.
Their egos, correct, and what they grew up with. If you grew up in areas where, you know, manhood is proven by dangerous sort of things that you do within your neighborhood, sell drugs, shoot people, whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. you're not really thinking along the lines of self-preservation too much. So I think we, as 20-year-olds, would probably be a little different, but ain't no telling with them cats. It could have been anything. Like you say, this is just it's just sulfur on a match, you know, with those particular – with those kind of guys, you know.
You know, one of the things that I always disturbs me about all of that is that, you know, we're talking about Puffy and Suge. These are two college-educated guys.
Right.
Puffy went to Howard. Suge went to UNLV, yeah. graduated, you know, went there on a football scholarship and graduated. Then came back home and decided to, you know, you're in a position where you're a record exec at a very successful record label, both of them,
mm-hmm.
right? Puffy starts at Uptown and then starts Bad Boy.
Right.
Has a very successful label. Suge with Dre with Aftermath. Aftermath, with Death Row Records.
Right.
Very successful label. And y'all decide to get into a beef.
Right, and turn it street when right. it doesn't have to be.
Right. Right. And it's crazy. Almost all, or not all, but almost all of the Piru Mob guys that were involved with Suge during that time are dead or in prison.
Mm.
So a lot of the guys that were involved with Puffy, the real gangsterous guys that
right.
we don't necessarily talk about all the time, but you can research and find out all mm-hmm. sorts of things about them, they're dead or in prison.
Yep.
So my question is, and this really bothers me as a black man especially, how do these two college-educated black men end up in a situation where they go from making records to people are ending up dead? To the best artists that you've ever had are dead.
Right.
In their prime. These guys are, you know, in their 20s and they're dead.
Yep.
Like, how do you allow that to happen?
And this is where I say...
That's the tragedy.
Yeah. This is where you brought up, and it's ego has so much to do with it. Like, you have to go from being a college-educated person, and why can't you just make music? Now you have to front and put an image out in front of this. Now you got to be hard. Now you got to be a gangster. You know, it ain't necessary to do that. Just, you have these two great
mm-hmm.
artists. Concentrate on keeping their careers alive. Don't turn it into petty stuff between the two and escalate it with ridiculous words and rumors. And like you say, people sending pictures to magazines and
magazines just, keeping up stuff.
True, keeping,
you know,
stuff up, right.
Yeah.
So it just spirals all out
but
of control.
But now let me ask you this, E. How much are we as a part of the culture also responsible for what happened? Because, and what I mean by that is, the culture itself had gone from, like, Chuck D often talks about how there used to be a clear line of separation between the hip-hop guys and the street guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point in the 90s, they merged.
They intersect.
To the point where you could not be a hip-hop guy unless you had already established some level of street credibility.
That's a good point.
So what I mean by that is, did we put some level of pressure on these guys to keep escalating this thing and turning this into a damn circus when it should have been something where, hey, cooler heads prevailed? And if you've really got some kind of dispute or discrepancy with a dude, you either sit down and talk about it or you take somebody to court. Like, all the while,
right,
you know what I'm saying?
You be smart about it,
like,
right?
Yeah, right. But we had created a culture in our culture where it seems that the violent way was inevitably going to have to be the way that this was solved at some point in time.
That's very interesting. And I don't know when it started. Like you say, I think Chuck D's saying that you knew the separation between the two, because you right. think back on artists like, I don't know, Jazzy Jeff and even Kumo D, LL before, even LL, who was considered to be somewhat tough. You knew he's right. not really a street dude.
And you know, and they all talk about that, how the gangsters used to come to the show. Like Melly Mel is on stage shouting out the gangsters.
Right.
But it's like, if you were a rapper, it was clear that you were not a gangster.
Right.
Because you were rapping.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Which makes perfect right. sense when you think about it. It's
you're
like,
not in the streets.
You're not
like
in
that.
The streets shooting people and dealing drugs, but right. somehow that became what you had to do in order to get credibility as a rapper. Our rappers that we know throughout the 90s, Jay-Z, for example, he spits about, you know, Marcy Projects and dealing drugs, and, mm-hmm. and so a lot of these rappers are doing that kind of thing, and it's like, when did that
yeah,
start?
And it's, you know, you have, because I think about another beef, too, from the 90s, MC8
yeah.
and DJ Quick,
ah.
which was, as I can remember, it was the first time, the first beef that I knew that there was, it was clear gang affiliations,
mm-hmm.
you know, Quick being a Blood and 8 being right. a Crip, and they were going at each other. And I just thought about, you know, that there was there seemed to be a lot of that we ran into in the 90s, that sort of thing. And I just don't know. It's like, I think we got to a point in the culture where we said, okay, you know, like we've blurred the lines now.
Right.
The streets, yes, hip-hop is a street culture or has roots or ties to the streets, but all of the bad elements of the street have also kind of
yeah.
bled into it, and it's just, you know, and it kind of culminated with Biggie and Tupac being dead.
Yeah, yeah, just two people dead
because yeah. of and nonsense. Because neither one of them, you know, this was not like this wasn't a crazed fan or somebody who shot
right.
these dudes.
Yeah, it was somebody affiliated with some clique who
right.
felt some sort of need.
This was some next level gangster type
right.
violence in both cases. Now, in the case of Tupac, if it's just because you were affiliated or you had chosen to affiliate yourself with people who were at odds with another gang in LA, or in the case of Biggie, where somebody's trying to get revenge,
mm-hmm.
or not necessarily even revenge, but you know, they don't like it that their dude got killed and they not whatever it
and
was.
And see, yeah, simple stuff like that from hanger-ons, like, you killed my man, so naturally I got
right.
to come out and, you know, I
and
got to come at you.
That's what Ice-T told was trying to, he said he was trying to tell Tupac, you are dealing with dudes that are never, you make records, you are dealing with dudes that are never going to make a record.
Right.
And you're antagonizing the wrong people,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I just think that, I think that it was a perfect storm of nonsense.
Man.
And then you know, and I don't, of course, when I say we, I don't mean you and I specifically.
Right, of course.
But mm-hmm. just in general, the culture, the people who were at the heads of the labels, you know, some levels the artists themselves, because Tupac was not one to shy away from antagonizing, talking trash and getting really personal about people to really prod them and goad them into possibly trying to do something to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you combine that with an incident in the MGM Grand where y'all are clearly stomping this dude, and, you know, it's just, the whole thing is just a mess, man.
Right.
But it is. All of the other beefs we had talked about had kind of elevated hip-hop.
Right.
This one had the adverse effect.
Yeah.
There was, like, a vacuum after that.
Right.
And that's why, like, when our golden era, I'd said, you know, I thought that it ended, the golden age ended in 97,
mm-hmm.
because I just felt like it was definitely a void after that.
Right.
You know,
right.
not to say that there's not good music made after that, of
yeah,
course.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I just felt like it was one of those things where it had kind of gone in the trash.
Right.
Because if we look at beefs in the 2000s, you mentioned Ja Rule and 50 Cent.
Yeah. Yeah, that was that's just,
you know, we look at that and we just kind of laugh at that.
Exactly. There nothing on the side of animosity really came out of that much. Ja Rule has no sort of even resemblance of a gangster, at least in my view,
or a career at this point.
Right, a career at this point. Now, 50 Cent, we all know 50 Cent's story of being shot and et cetera, et cetera. So he kind of takes that reputation and runs with it and uses that to his advantage. But I don't necessarily see him or think of him as this person in the street. And these two go at it over artistic stuff, which of course it's artistic stuff, but yeah, some other elements get into it.
Yeah.
And of course, then you get your beef. But
and 50 Cent is very petty. So and you know, you can see over the years, it's very easy for him to get into a beef with pretty much anybody. He beef with Rick Ross, you
Floyd
know,
Mayweather.
Yeah,
still
Floyd,
beefing with
yeah,
him.
You know, it's like it's some of this stuff is like, come on, dude. You know, like this is not even worth it. I wouldn't think, but he. The biggest thing I take from that though is that Ja Rule was a superstar when this started,
right?
And when it was over, he was
absolutely
finito.
Ruined. He was done. Yeah, done.
Yes, it just completely destroyed his career.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe things had run its course, and he was going to fade out anyway, because music careers a lot of times tend not to be exceptionally long. There's a few exceptions.
Right. Know? But I think, yeah, he had some more miles. He had some more gas in the tank to do some more things.
50 siphoned all that gas out.
Right. No doubt. Emptied the tank and it's all over. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, man.
My favorite one, though, from the 21st century is Jay-Z versus Nas.
Ah, yes. One of the best, if not, well, I won't say. Hard to classify best, considering we just talked about the Tupac and Biggie one. If you want to rank them, I guess you could call that the most tragic and probably the biggest one. But this was definitely one of the biggest. So
folks, real quick. So Jay-Z makes a song called A Takeover that he does at Summer Jam, and the crowd goes wild. And I forgot which album it was on. But he disses Nas. He dissed some other people, too. It might have been Havoc or somebody from Mobb Deep. I don't know. But at this time, Jay-Z is already on top of the world, right? And in the eyes of a lot of people, he is that dude. And Nas's career has somewhat slid and been on a little bit of a decline.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I always tell people if your first album is Illmatic, it's impossible to go anywhere but down from there because it's a perfect album.
Mm-hmm.
But Nas has been in somewhat of a decline, and Jay-Z goes and he disses him on The Takeover.
Mm-hmm.
And Nas comes back with Ether.
Yeah. Scorching.
Scorched
track,
Earth.
Yeah.
There's everything that he said about Jay-Z, people still reference.
Right, to this day.
Calling him J.J. Evans. Saying he looked like the camel on the cool cigarette, camel cigarettes.
Slight truth to that.
Right, you know, talking about you 36 in a karate class, you Tybo ho.
Yeah.
Just all so many things with whiskers like a rat compared to beans you wear. I mean, I could go on and on with that song. But the song is called Ether. If you want to put it in context of how brutal that song is, Ether is now a verb in the English lexicon.
Yeah.
So to get ethered means that somebody did to you what Nas did to Jay-Z.
Right.
Now, it didn't long-term have any effects on Jay-Z, right?
No, of course not. We know who he is now.
Right. And he came up with the song Super Ugly, but it didn't have the same effect.
Yeah.
Ether was just – and the way Nas was flowing on it was almost nonstop.
Yeah.
Because at some point, it was like he's not even rapping anymore.
He's almost
just
hypnotized.
Right.
Yeah, and just talking. Yep, and it's just – yeah.
Because the beat is not anything all that amazing.
Right.
But he's just going off, and he's just saying all of this stuff. And it's like you can tell like he had this – like you know what I equated to? This is funny. So – you may be able to relate to this, Eric. You know, you have an argument with a woman, and she's got stuff she's been waiting. It's December, and she's been holding on to this since March.
She got bullets
and
ready.
She's been waiting for you to say the right thing, the keywords, so she can just let it go on you.
Yeah.
That's what this was.
Yeah.
Like, Nas was saying stuff like, he's like, I've been holding on to this about you
for a while now.
And now you have come out, and you've given me a reason to unleash this on you. And I'm going to say everything I can, and I know you're going to be hurt at the end.
Right. Yep.
And that's basically what it was.
Yeah.
And you know, it helped Nas because it gave his career a resurgence. Like people thought, you know, he was falling off and now he's, you know, but then he was back because he releases Stillmatic and Godson's pretty good albums after that.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Well, even on Super Ugly, remember Jay-Z actually basically kind of admitted that he was sleeping with Nas's baby mama. When you bring a man's woman into the mix on something where, you know, it shouldn't even be about that. Now you're starting to cross lines.
Mm-hmm.
And of course now what is the response going to be to this? Usually it's going to be something very heavy. You can't even really come back with just words.
Right.
You got to come back with almost something physical.
Right. I mean, you got to go meet somebody somewhere.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So
I've heard that the two mothers of Nas and Jay-Z are actually what squashed that after Super Ugly.
Mm-hmm.
That Jay-Z's mom was like, yo, you cut that out. And Nas's mom's like, yo, you know, so.
Well, they had stuff to fall back on and refer to. Look at Tupac and Biggie's thing. You
and
know?
They didn't want to turn out like
Right, and you don't want it to turn like that.
And Miss Wallace. Yeah.
Exactly. No question. No question.
And it's unfortunate that it had to happen to Biggie and Tupac, but perhaps it set an example for people going forward to say,
true.
Don't let this happen to us.
Right. I'll agree with that. And yeah, maybe somebody had to be martyrs for that to happen. So
it was definitely one of those things that, and I just want to get a quick one in here on last one that I thought about from the 2000s was T.I. versus Lil Flip. I don't know if you remember
Lil
this.
Flip.
I don't know if you remember this. And I don't know why. But so the reason why this stood out to me is because when these dudes were beefing, quote unquote, it was they were both referring to each other as king, to themselves as king of the South.
Yeah.
And it aggravated me to no end because I'm like, okay, Lil Flip, you from Houston, T.I., you from Atlanta. It's 2004 or whatever it was, 3, whatever. How either one of y'all figure you king of the South? Lil Flip, you from Houston. How you king of the South and you in the same city as Scarface and Bun B? And T.I., you in the city with Andre 3000?
Right. And you Big
about
Boy.
You,
yeah.
Right. And you talking about you king. You're not even king in your own city.
Yeah.
And you all are arguing over. But I just, that one probably is a throwaway beef. But it always bothered me for a long time that these two dudes would have the audacity to say this. Because I was like, if either Scarface or Andre would have taking it upon themselves to say, both of y'all are crazy, I'm the king, the whole thing would have been over.
Yeah.
Because neither one of you could have responded.
Right. That's a good one. Yeah, I didn't even know about that one. Lil Flip.
Yeah. First of all, you dress, well, you know, I'm not gonna do that. But you got on a doggone leprechaun suit.
Yeah,
on the album,
on the album cover.
You can't be the king, dog. You're just like lemon. King of the Leprechauns,
right?
Maybe, I don't know.
And Lucky the Leprechaun off the Lucky Charms box, I believe, really should be considered the king of the Leprechauns.
Right.
So you've lost that battle as well, Lil
Yes,
Flip.
He should have sent you a cease and desist behind that nonsense.
Hey, Vivoco, hey, don't start the beef going that you can't end.
Well, man, I think we probably are at our time limit again.
Yeah.
Our engineer, Daniel, is shaking his head, yeah. So, folks, we just want to say thank you for listening, especially if you're listening to all three segments. I think this was a pretty good conversation, though, because
definitely.
I think that beefs is, you know, it's a part of hip-hop.
Right.
And some of them, you know, like some of them are tragic, some of them are comical, some of them really kind of elevate the game and the genre and the culture.
But
you know, so everything's everything in between.
Right, and the funny thing about it also is there's actually an appeal to it to, you know, fans out there, to hip-hop fans.
That's right.
We kind of eat this stuff up.
We do.
And thus, like you were saying earlier, what could have been the attributing factor to some of these beefs escalating way more than what they needed to, fan bases in themselves, you know, kind of pushing it along, record sales, things of that nature, you know, can easily be, you know, you can easily attribute to, hey, us just as ordinary fans.
No doubt
may
about
have,
it.
You know, so.
No doubt about it. So, hey, we hope you like this. You can like and subscribe. Like I said, you can listen to us on iTunes, on Deezer, on iHeartRadio, on Spotify.
All of them.
Yes. You can follow us on social media on. Do you want to give out the social media addresses you want me to?
Well, you messing with me.
I just put you on the spot.
Diddy, never. I'm off in space, man, and he going to start trying to talk about, hey, man, put out some addresses. We are on Facebook at Cindy's Birthday Party. Is that right?
For that is
one,
correct.
Full one on that one. On our actual website, it is under Cindy's BDP.
That's on Twitter. Cindy's BDP.
On Twitter, that is Cindy's BDP. Putting me on the spot like this, pop quizzing me like this.
And the actual website is cindysbirthdayparty.com.
Yes.
Instagram, it's at Cindy's Birthday Party, all one word.
Yeah. Which one is Cindy's Party by itself?
Well, you can, our website, you can also go to Cindy's Party, or you can do cindysbirthdayparty.com. Either one, and it'll take you to our website.
That's a lot to remember.
Yeah,
but
and you can
write
listen
it down.
To, yeah, you, right. Yeah, write it down. And you can listen to our podcast on our website. And like I said, it pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts.
No doubt.
So we need you to go on there, like and subscribe. Once again, give a shout out to our boy Zay. Zay, get better.
Get we'll better, have feel you better,
on
brother.
Here on the next show. And yep. If all hearts and minds are clear, we can give the benediction.
Somebody pass the collection.
Right, right. But that's it for now, y'all. Peace.
Holla.
Do you know what beef is? Ask yourself. Do you know what beef is?
Ha 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 ha, check out this bizarre rapper style used by me, the B-I-G, I put my key.